Welcome to PFF Fantasy Football Podcast, Week 12 AFC Preview Edition. I'm your host, Ian Hart. It's happy Wednesday, happy Thanksgiving. It's a great day to be great. And joining me, as always, in this edition of the podcast, PFF's finest, Kevin Cole. Kevin, we started with catchphrases. You will throw an NFC team out there. Just what's on your mind to start this lovely podcast?
Yeah. I do have something on my mind, so I'm glad you're giving me this forum. I know, shocking. I have something to say here at the beginning of the podcast. So, perhaps this should have been handled, you know, behind closed doors, but we're transparent with the audience here. So, you know, I just wanted to come out immediately and just say that last week you were on point. Okay. You had the notes, you had the analysis, you had everything going. I don't know if I gave us a chance to really have a great podcast last week. You know, I don't think I was there. You were there, but I don't think I was there. So I'm just putting that out there now that I could have been better. I should have been better. I need to be better. Accountability is very important in this industry. So I'm just going to lay that out there, and we're going to work hopefully together moving forward. But I just want to make sure I am taking the blame for anyone who had any issues with the podcast last week.
I'm thankful you're taking the Justin Fields route instead of the Zach Wilson route. I'm pretty sure that's the bit going on right here. But man, hey,
you don't want to lose. You don't want to lose the podcast studio. If you lose the podcast studio as a leader and you're not accountable, then you know things are just all downhill from there. I know I can't just say, "Oh, it's senior data scientist." You know, oh, I can just do whatever I want. No, each week we need to grind. We need to be our best. And it was me. I'm taking the blame for anything, any problems that happened last week.
That is so respectful of you, Kevin. All right, I don't even know what to say back to that. So let's just get going with our AFC East and kick things off with our Miami Dolphins. First place, 7-3, coming back from the bye this week at home against Houston. 13.5 point favorites, game total resting on 46.5. So, Kevin, you always send out some great charts every week, kind of does a good job of showing the efficiency level that every quarterback is playing at. Y-axis, EPA per play, X is PFF offensive grade. Maybe they're switched. Regardless, top right is the best. And my God, no one is further in the top or to the right than Tua Tagovailoa. Now, how much of this hot stretch, Kevin? Because let's face it, the opponent does matter. And he has been ripping through, checks notes, the Lions, the Bears, and the Browns ever since that four-dropped interception debacle against the Steelers. So, look, the offense is fantastic. We've seen, obviously, enough of that. Even with Teddy and Skyler out there, you can still see Tyreek and Waddle at least give them a floor. Obviously, Tua raises the ceiling for everyone involved. But do you really think this is, again, what the numbers are saying, the number one passing game in the NFL? Or is it really good and we just happen to see them take advantage of what have objectively been some cake matchups here over the last few weeks?
I mean, it's always a mix, right? It's always a mix of both. I think it can be a top five type of passing offense, and it has exploded on the back of poor defenses, some 50-50 balls that have gone their way, some run after catch that has gone their way, all that sort of stuff. And, you know, it's a small sample. There's always like two different elements of trying to figure out like how good is Tua in the passing game, right? Well, the one element is it's a small sample. It's a random defenses that you're playing. So that's part of it. Another part of it is like how much context builds around the offense working for him, the receivers, everything else. I mean, I'm not worried about it too much. I think if you have Tua on your team, you're very happy with what you've seen so far, despite him missing some weeks. So you're firing him up and it's a thin passing game. It's a narrow passing game and you're just loving it for fantasy purposes, not questioning it too much. You're just not going to get necessarily the high end outcomes that you've gotten a few times recently.
Easy game with the pass catchers and for this week in the backfield as well. Jeff Wilson, fire him up everywhere. He's my overall.
Yeah, I mean, you got the RB. Texans this week, so we're not really going to figure anything out in that regard until next week.
Hey, he took over the backfield, though, even more so before that by 60% snaps, 17 carries, 5 targets. Mostert only 28% of the snaps, 8 carries, and 4 targets. So fire up Wilson everywhere. The Texans have somehow allowed the week's overall PPR RB1 or RB2 in 5 of their 10 games this season. Mostert, decent enough flex. I have him ranked as my RB32, so maybe he can get going. Just realized in our 2-game sample so far, it really has started to swing in favor of Jeff Wilson. Second place, Buffalo Bills, also sitting at 7-3. Thanksgiving first game of the slate over in Detroit. They are favored by 9.5 points. Game total week high 54.5. Gotta love that. So I came up, Kevin, with an entertainment index a couple years ago where I try to take the quarterbacks that, in my opinion, have really high highs and also really low lows, but regardless, they're never in the middle, and that's pretty fun for watching, especially on Red Zone. And basically, I take just the big-time throw rate, add it to the turnover-worthy play rate, and that combined number will tell you who the most entertaining quarterback in the league is. The only quarterback with a combined big-time throw rate and turnover-worthy play rate over 10%, Josh Allen. Modern-day Brett Favre, maybe just the first ever Josh Allen. I don't know. I just appreciate the way Josh Allen plays football, Kevin. Can we just remark on that for a second? Like, yeah, there's some turnover-worthy plays out there, but I don't remember a player that forces defenses to guard literally every square inch of the field like Josh Allen, other than, again, maybe someone like Brett Favre back in the day, but he never even had the athleticism as a rusher. So just overall thoughts on this, you know, just super meaningful statistic I've managed to come up with here.
Yeah, I mean, again, you're just bringing the good. So I gotta have something to play off of there. I mean, I think I agree. There probably is no other quarterback who has been more exciting to watch this year. Now, there may be some consternation slightly about the fact that he had his worst fantasy output of the season last week, 12 points and change. It's the first time I think he's been less than 19 or something points this year. So that's a little bit concerning. If you look at the rushing there, three carries for 7 yards. So I don't know what's going on with the elbow, but is that affecting that area of it? That's going to be concerning because it wasn't like they were just completely dominating and blowing out the Browns in last week. So that's something to be taking a look at. And we have a short week this week. Now, Detroit Lions, it's get right as it gets right here. But I think I'm really going to be paying attention to whether or not he's running, because that's something which raises his floor to like QB6. His floor is QB6 if he's running the ball. And if he's not, then he could have another outcome like he did last week, where you fall into maybe even out of being a QB1 for the week, which you're hoping not to get many of those from Josh Allen going forward.
8 of 10 games this year, he's been a top 5 fantasy quarterback. So Kevin is not kidding about that top 6 floor. He had a week 11 quote unquote dud in week 8. I'm sorry, QB 11 finish in week 8. And then last week he did finish as the QB 18, or first time outside the top 12. But look, it is Josh Allen. And guess what? With Stephon Diggs and Gabriel Davis facing this Lions secondary that we've seen get torched all season long, I mean, this Bills offense, they're implied for 32 points this week. I think we are firing up all these pass game options with confidence. Devin Singletary also, Kevin, it's been surprising to see them go out, get Nyheim Hines, talk about how they've wanted this, you know, scat back, and really not much has changed. Nyheim Hines, the only thing he's really done is take Duke Johnson's kick return job, which did piss me off, but whatever, that's a story for another day. Singletary, though, in these 4 games since they traded for Hines, 75, 74, 72, and 73% snap rates. I mean, James Cook came out and looked good and hit with his touches last week, but really, Kevin, nothing much has changed for Singletary. He's still getting this 3-down workhorse role. And as much as more weeks than not, we're going to see Josh, you know, get more involved at the goal line. I mean, let's not forget, it did take until week 10 for Singletary to find the end zone on the ground for the first time. But again, he's a low-end RB2, and maybe he never gets up into that true top 10 territory, but still feeling pretty good about Singletary down the stretch, which was not a given when they made that trade just a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. I mean, Devin Singletary, it's one of those things where it's kind of like the Bills want to kill him. Like every season, they draft Zach Moss, they draft James Cook, now they're bringing in Nyheim Hines, and he was really good down the stretch last year too. So it was a little bit surprising that, again, that they want to seem to bring guys in to potentially replace him, and he's been the guy. The question with them is just always going to be Josh Allen, because he is that turnover-worthy play guy. He's like, I'm not taking the check down. I'm throwing it down the field. So even if he is running most of the routes, he'll end up getting a couple of catches, maybe at best. It's just not that fruitful of a receiving role, but it's better than you would have expected with the trades and the drafts and everything else that's happened recently.
Third place, New England Patriots sitting at 6-4, also playing on Thanksgiving, the night game, Patriots at Vikings. I appreciate this, Kevin. I don't want a classic game as the last one on Thanksgiving. I want to be able to comfortably fall asleep in the second quarter and like not lose future sleep over missing out on that game. So good job, NFL schedule makers. Vikings are 2.5-point home favorites. Game total resting at 42.5. So Mac Jones, you look at the box score last week, I think it was like 21 for 25, over 200 yards. My God, I don't think there was one play in that entire game where he tried to actively push the ball into a tight window or downfield, which is fine. Style points don't matter in real life and fantasy alike, but still, I'm not going to say right now, while it was a good performance, I mean, they scored 3 offensive points. And for the season, it's still been an awfully disappointing effort from Mac Jones. You mentioned, I think last time we talked, Kevin, that you had looked at quarterbacks who really had that fall off from year 1 to year 2 and, you know, kind of the bucket of comps that Mac Jones was finding himself in. And I just wanted to look at that 2021 quarterback class and see who has been improving as a passer this year and who hasn't. And the only quarterback in terms of the 6 categories I usually look at, PFF pass grade, passer rating, yards per attempt, adjusted completion rate, big time throws and turnover worthy plays, Trevor Lawrence is the only second year quarterback that's improved in every single passing category. Mac Jones is the only second-year quarterback that has declined in every single passing category. Now, Mac Jones, rookie year, Mac Jones has been the best single season of any of these quarterbacks, even including Trevor Lawrence this season. But, man, this really is the tale of two quarterbacks for Mac Jones. No, he wasn't necessarily a world beater as a rookie, but a really good quarterback by pretty much any metric you want to pull up. And this year, he's been Zach Wilson level bad without, you know, the Zach Wilson kind of low light highlight tape that you can put together. And by you, I mean me. So with that in mind, Kevin, like Mac Jones, after the bye, again, he chilled out a little bit. He was coming back from the injury. He's never had the most weapons out there, but how much of what we're seeing in 2022 do you think is the real Mac Jones? And what do you think his chances are of maybe getting back to the guy we saw in 2021 here down the stretch?
I mean, I think there's some chance of him getting back to it, but every week that goes by, we get a little bit less confident. What's interesting is earlier this season, he was playing more aggressively, turning the ball over, throwing the ball down the field sometimes, putting it up for grabs, and it was getting some tip ball interceptions, things like that. Maybe there's a directive from on high to just turtle and play this sort of style. Maybe the zappy mania is causing him to feel a little bit of that pressure and then play the way he did. What's interesting about his stats last week, you mentioned high completion percentage, averaged 9.1 yards per attempt, but 6 sacks that he took. So just
what was the ADOT, like 4?
Yeah, his ADOT, 4.6 yards. And yeah, the air through the air, only 30% of the yards that were generated through the air, and 70% was generated on yak in that game. So it was the most conservative game possible. You still think you would have been able to get more than 3 points, though, out of that sort of game. There were just too many drive killing sacks, and sacks are another sign of conservatism. If we're not talking about a scrambling quarterback who's getting sacked while he's trying to get out of the pocket, it's I'm just going to take this sack rather than potentially throw an interception. And it killed the offense last week. If that's going to they're going to play going forward, I guess it's okay because the defense is coming to play every week.
They really have been. Really, but on offense, can only at this point trust 2 guys, Jacoby Myers, who is the wide receiver 20 in PPR points per game this season, tied with Michael Pittman. He's my wide receiver 26 on the week. And still Ramondre Stevenson. The amount of people that still give me these like start sit questions with Ramondre versus like low-end RB2s surprises me. Expected PPR points per game this season, there are 8 running backs averaging at least 17. Eckler, Mixon, Barkley, CMC, Derrick Henry, Josh Jacobs, Alvin Kamara, and Ramondre Stevenson. I mean, we're talking about here one of only 7 running backs averaging at least 7.5 PPR points per game from purely receiving production. So even in a game like last week where Damon Harris is staying involved, we're still seeing Stevenson nearly double his carries. And again, we don't even mind if Damian gets more involved on the ground as long as Ramondre keeps that sweet, sweet pass down work.
Yeah. Now, yeah. My only concern, though, is that I thought Harris looked good running the ball, right?
He was
much, much better than Ramondre. So, you know, it's Patriots, it's running backs, you know, you never know what can happen, but I agree. We're very happy about the heavily skewed routes run towards Ramondre. And that's really the flashing warning sign we're going to see, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was closer to a 50-50 mix as far as the carries that they're picking up this week, which also means that Harris is probably going to get a few more routes as they mix in if he's playing there a little bit more in the backfield. So definitely something to monitor coming off of last week. This will be a good sign as to like how much of a lock he really has on that backfield, where you have a game where Harris looks to outplay him, at least running the ball. Do they make any adjustments next week, this coming week, based upon it?
Last place, 6-4, New York Jets. This week they are facing the Bears at home. Jets are favored by 4.5, game total at a lowly 39.5. So I liked your tweet after the whole Zach Wilson experience this weekend, Kevin. You basically said the real story yesterday was that Zach Wilson was awful. This week's main story, Zach Wilson didn't sufficiently take the blame. The real story the rest of the season, Zach Wilson probably will continue to be bad no matter what he says, which well put. So it was one of those things where I kept expecting like the quote to kind of have been taken out of context, but it didn't really seem that way. That said, the dude's just frustrated. I don't know. Like I wouldn't hate that every time I write a bad article or have a bad podcast, I then have to go talk to the entire world about what went wrong, you know, in the immediate
accountability. Remember, we're accountable though. We're accountable here.
We are accountable. That's true. And you know, you've been stressing that all episode, but again, just overall thoughts on the Zach Wilson situation. Cause right now, as things stand, I do want to keep in mind that before the bye, he was coming off his best game of the season, pretty much, against the Buffalo Bills. Now, that was still game manager type mode. We haven't seen big highs all year, but the offensive line, it was supposed to be really good, and they've suffered a ton of injuries. I mean, he has the largest drop-off easily in the league in terms of yards per attempt under pressure versus when kept clean. That said, it's so damning, Kevin, when we see Joe Flacco and even Mike White last year come in and have more success in this offense. So, what are we doing here in New York? Because I still maintain that this is not a team with serious aspirations of contention. That said, they're 6-4. So how do you think they should balance trying to win this year? And also, probably more importantly, finding out if Zach Wilson is their long-term answer under center or not. Or maybe they already have found that out.
Yeah, I think they pretty much found that out. It was weird. I was thinking about this franchise, and I know you want to hang tough and you want to give all the chances you can for quarterbacks, but like, who could we even point to as a Jets quarterback since, like, Joe Namath? Since Broadway Joe, like, a couple of years of Chad Pennington, some Vinny Testaverde.
Sanchez.
Like, resurges. But yeah, Sanchez is another guy, you know, you're holding on too long after a while for some of these guys. So I do think at this point, and especially when we look at the timeline of Joe Douglas and Robert Saleh, right? Saleh, in his second season here, this has been the third draft for Joe Douglas. This has to happen, okay? They have to go forward now. They have to, you mentioned, they're 6-4. It's not like they're going to tank out the rest of the season and get it. Whatever quarterback option they're going to come forward for next season, and they're probably going to need that option. It's not like they're going to, you know, harm their draft position or something. If they tank out the rest of the season, they're done. Like, these guys are all fired. So you have to try and make the playoffs. We still have them about having a 50% chance to make the playoffs. And you can always go back to Zach Wilson if it goes horribly wrong, I guess, with Mike White, who I believe had been elevated to second place in the pecking order above Joe Flacco. So I think you have to make that move. You have to try while you can right now to make the playoffs, because who knows how good this defense will be next year or going forward. And you have that at least right now. And you got receivers, right? You got players on here who can maybe elevate a quarterback who gives you a chance to do something.
Mike White, also the noted creator of the fantastic HBO series White Lotus. I do think the one kind of interesting thing that could be going on with either White or Joe Flacco, it's honestly what we see with these quarterbacks. White and Flacco, they're going to be your check down dink and dunkers that are going to lead to a lot more PPR friendly opportunities for the entire passing game, specifically the running backs. I mean, over these past two seasons, 51 quarterbacks with at least 100 dropbacks, White and Flacco are the only two quarterbacks in that sample with a check down rate of at least 10%. Zach Wilson at 5.3%. He's the 13th, you know, most check down adverse quarterback in the sample. So hopefully this backfield clears up at some point, because right now Ty freaking Johnson is playing ahead of James Robinson. But I'm cautiously optimistic that Michael Carter in particular could have some better days down the stretch if they make that quarterback change. And I also think the big winner could be Tyler Conklin. I talked about this a little bit on the waiver pod, but if you look at weeks 15 to 17, the fantasy playoffs, easiest tight end schedule goes to Tyler Conklin. So we've seen him boom a few times this year. I get it. If you're in the fantasy playoffs, hopefully you already have a Travis Kelce or Mark Andrews out there. But as we've seen, you know, with one tight end after another getting injured, if you are needy down the stretch, Tyler Conklin could be your guy, pal. First place Ravens in the AFC North sitting at 7-3. They've won four straight games, Kevin, but my goodness, this passing game has been brutal ever since week three. Now, I'm not going to pin everything on Lamar Jackson. This was already a unit that we didn't really think had a bunch of awesome pass catchers outside of Andrews and Bateman. So you take away Rashad Bateman pretty much starting in week four, and what are you going to expect? So at the same time, man, NFL defenses have been making life tough on them, but at the end of the day, 24, 38, 37 points in the first three games. They're averaging just 21 points in weeks 4-11. So the schedule hasn't been the easiest during the stretch, but do you see Lamar getting back to that, you know, MVP level that we were actually seeing in the first three games? Because I just don't know rationally what's really going to change about this passing offense other than the schedule potentially getting a little bit softer.
Yeah, I think the schedule getting softer is going to matter. I mean, Andrews is back, you know, continuing to have that to lean on is going to matter. You're going to hope to, you know, pop some big runs and get some of that running game contribution that raises the ceiling and floor for Lamar Jackson more than pretty much anyone other than Justin Fields right now. But the schedule, I don't know, man. Like Jacksonville, sneaky, okay. Denver Broncos are maybe a top two, top three defense in the NFL. The Steelers, you know, they're okay, but they can always pose some problems. Browns stink. Falcons stink. And then back to the Steelers again in week 17. So I don't know if the schedule is even that easy for them going forward. I think it went a little bit under the radar, like how bad that game was against this Baker Mayfield, Lamar Jackson, 2018.
It's 3-3 going the fourth.
Yeah, like it's like that's low. Imagine if they lost that game, okay? And that was not out of the question, them losing that game. So it's bad. Like it's low-key bad there, especially when you talk about them being leading the division. I mean, I don't know. I think the Bengals are just a much better team at this point. Well, better team. Let's not go much better team. But I think they're a better team at this point. So I don't know. The Ravens got to show me something in these next couple of weeks before I'm going to say they're back on track in any way.
Lamar Jackson has not finished better than the QB 10 in Fantasyland ever since week 3. So look, the floor's still up there. And as to Kevin's point, it's not the easiest schedule down the stretch. That said, should be able to hopefully boom in some of those matchups. But yeah, just hasn't, again, just been this dynamic team that, or the dynamic offense, I should say, that a lot of us were expecting. And in the run game, I'm not necessarily expecting this to blow up either. We'll see if Gus Edwards can come back. But the problem is Kenyon Drake and Justice Hill were splitting time last week. Mike Davis is still out there for a snap or two. And when you bring Gus back in the equation, maybe J.K. Dobbins, I don't see this backfield condensing down to one or two running backs. And that's what we would need here because Ravens running backs as a whole this season, just 28th in total carries, dead last in targets. So it's been an offense that I don't think has had enough success running the ball to really warrant being, you know, one of the most run heavy offenses in the NFL, like someone where the Bears are, where we can still live with the running backs because of how much they run overall.
Yeah, they don't really catch the ball that much.
Never.
I'm looking here. I didn't watch this game. 5 catches for 15 yards. What the hell happened? How did that go? 2 running backs in this game.
Not good. But moving on to the 6-4 Cincinnati Bengals sitting there in second place this week. They're trying to, you know, keep on keeping on against one of their AFC rivals, Tennessee Titans in Nashville. Cincy 1.5-point road favorites, game total resting at 42.5. So Joe Burrow, last 12 regular season starts, he has 5 overall QB1 finishes. Obviously had that great stretch down the end of last year. I'm cheating a little bit because he wasn't that, you know, productive in the playoffs or anything, but still pretty impressive. And now on the season, he is the overall QB5. He has passed Lamar Jackson. So just looking at what he's been able to do without Jamar Chase, I mean, over these last 8 quarters, the offense has scored 10 touchdowns. Joe Mixon has 5 of those. Samaje Perine has 3. Trenton Irwin has 1. And then Joe Burrow rushed in for the final one. So just the fact that they've been able to be this productive, this high scoring, even without Jamar Chase and honestly, T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd not putting forward the highest scoring efforts. I saw Higgins go completely loco last week without finding the end zone. So obviously still playing a big part, but man, this offense, again, even without Chase, you can argue has looked more consistent and better than they have all season long. Kevin, how much of that do you think is an actual, you know, good job by Zach Taylor here, because we have seen them really start embracing this offense where rarely, if ever, do we see them go under center.
Okay. Under no circumstances ever can we give credit to Zach Taylor. That is the first rule of football Twitter. We have to know that. I mean, it's weird, one of those weird things where maybe we're grading on a curve a little bit here because we say, hey, the Bengals are doing like the super obvious thing that everyone on the planet thinks they should do. Congratulations. So they're doing that. It's really amazing that they always go through this flirting with not leaning into the pass enough in some of these games, because I don't know, does anyone other than maybe like a Josh Allen, actually have a higher ceiling at quarterback sometimes than what we see for Joe Burrow and what he's able to produce around him. Yeah, you're right. The touchdowns were all concentrated to Samaje Perine last week. So congratulations, desperation running back starters who started him in their leagues last year. But he can really spread a lot of wealth to receivers when he hits that high-end outcome. And hopefully no one got scared off with that Cleveland game where the offense looked completely inept, because it just came roaring back the last 2 weeks.
Keep an eye on Samaje Perine. Joe Mixon is in the concussion protocol, and if he's going to be missing it, Samaje Perine is going to warrant top 20 treatment. Again, not the most talented running back in the league by any stretch of the imagination, but he's also not necessarily some guy that we should expect to not make, you know, the most out of his opportunities. How many, you know, double negatives kind of throw in the one sentence there? Apologies. But with Perine, again, I think he still owns the all-time NCAA single game rushing record. Him and Melvin Gordon both broke LT's record within a matter of like a week. What a wild time that was in college football land. But it should be the Perine show, even if Chris Evans is back in action. I understand he was out last week. But really, guys, as much as we love what Chris Evans can do when he's flanked out wide, I've made the damn highlight reels myself. I know the guy's talented, but they honestly view him and Travion Williams pretty close. Perine has always been more so considered, honestly, not quite a 1B to Joe Mixon, but week 18 last season, Mixon and Perine rested, and just hasn't been close between Perine and Evans, you know, in the small samples we do have without Mixon. Third place, Cleveland Browns sitting there at 3-7. This week, they're home against the Buccaneers. Tampa Bay favored by 3.5, game total at 43. Look, Kevin, we gave Jacoby a lot of credit after the first 3 or 4 weeks, and then he started to kind of die off a little bit, but he's continued to play really well, man. This is still the 10th-ranked scoring offense. Last week, he went for 324 and 3 touchdowns. That was with multiple drop touchdowns out there and just one really good throw after another. I know he got a couple scores in garbage time, but those were not, you know, prevent, dink and dunk our way down the field. That was DPJ and Cooper making some great catches on even better throws down the field throughout that fourth quarter. So I'm just shocked that the Browns, this roster that a lot of people consider to be Super Bowl viable, once you add Deshaun Watson to the equation, they just can't get out of their own way on defense, man. Jacoby Brissett has not been the problem. If you would have gone to Cleveland, Browns fans, bettors, and you like told them before the season, like, hey, these are Jacoby's numbers after the first 11 weeks, I for sure would have taken the over on 3 wins. I mean, I probably would have been taking them to win the AFC North if I knew this was the level of quarterback play they were going to have before Deshaun Watson even returned. But unfortunately, the defense just hasn't been able to hold things together. So now sitting at just 3-7, are we eliminating the Browns, Kevin, or do you think this is still a team that maybe they can get hot at the right time? Because again, we've seen the ceiling on offense with Jacoby. You can only imagine it's going to be higher once Deshaun's back here in a few weeks.
I mean, I think it's going to be nearly impossible for them to make the playoffs at this point, because they have the Bucs this week for the last week here before they turn it over to Deshaun Watson. Texans, Bengals, Ravens, Saints, Commanders, Steelers. I mean, not the easiest. They pretty much have to win out at this point to make the playoffs, but they can have some good fantasy performances. And I think we really got to like dedicate some time. We got to get giving flowers is the thing nowadays. So I guess we got to give some flowers, whatever the hell that means, to Amari Cooper, yeah. Right? Like, Jacoby Brissett, like, this is called just betting on talent, betting on the lack of wide receiver competition right here. The only receivers who have scored more points, more fantasy points, PPR fantasy points, than Amari Cooper this season are A.J. Brown, Jalen Waddle, Cooper Kupp, Justin Jefferson, Tyreek Hill, Stephon Diggs, Davante Adams. That's it. Sheesh. No one else. Cooper is next on that list. So what a solid pick for anyone who ended up scooping him up and just saying, we're going to bet on talent here. And you may have even higher upside to come with Deshaun Watson coming back after this week.
Legit top 12 upside potential down the stretch. Hell, if you want to call him a top 12 wide receiver for this matchup, I am fine with that. As Kevin said last week, we do not believe in his home away splits, but neutral field Amari Cooper, man, that's a true cheat code.
Exactly.
Right there.
That's kind of a way. Come on, let's call that away. Let's call that away for the sake of the killing the split. It stuff. Yeah.
Final note here. Donovan Peoples-Jones, man, last seven games now, PPR wide receiver 29, 47, 34, 25, 33, 23, and 14, finally found the end zone last week. So again, not a consistent top 12, top 20 guy by any stretch, but still someone that is a rock solid flex option. And once Deshaun Watson gets back, could see a lot more upside out of this passing game. David Njoku, if you happen to have multiple tight ends, you know, in close start sit questions between multiple top 12 guys, I'd probably take the other one because we did only see him run a route on 42% of Jacoby's dropbacks last week. But that certainly seems to be a situation where he was questionable going into the game and they were just easing him back into action. So, you know, having an extra game to go out there, he looked healthy. I mean, he was hurdling dudes. I mean, looked as athletic as ever. And Harrison Bryant dropped a touchdown and Farrell freaking Brown dropped a touchdown. So I would expect David Njoku's usage to be right back to what it was before his injury sooner rather than later. I'm tentatively drinking the Kool-Aid, have him as my tight end eight this week. Final squad to talk about in the AFC North, Kevin. Steelers sitting there at 3-7 this week at the Colts on Monday Night Football. Indy favored by 2.5, game total resting at a lowly 39. So first of all, is there any chance George Pickens gets suspended? That was a pretty dirty hit at the end on Tyler Boyd. And they have set a precedent. I mean, I'm not saying this was as bad as Gronk, you know, back in the day hitting the Bills corner, or as, you know, bad as OBJ spearing Josh Norman out of nowhere. But those helmet-to-helmet hits have gotten one-game suspensions before. What's the verdict on this? Because I know they announced the fines for the previous week's games on Saturday. I feel like if he was going to be suspended, we'd already know by now.
Yeah, I think we'd already know by now. I don't think so. I mean, it got blown up somewhat from the fact that, like, the Steelers and Bengals, like, hate each other so much. The fan bases hate each other so much that that was just getting shared like crazy among
Bengals fans. He got ejected.
He got ejected. I'm not saying it wasn't bad. It was bad. It was unnecessary. It was a bonehead play. Pickens, low-key, probably like a bonehead. Talented, super talented bonehead. So it was a cheap shot, all that sort of stuff. But I mean, Tyler Boyd, he was okay though, right? So if he got a concussion or something, then I think that would be more of an issue. Other than that, I don't think there's going to be any penalties there. But the story here, I think, is now with Jaylen Warren out, I believe this week for sure. Is Najee Harris going to do something? Is he going to continue to do something? Because if you've had him and you've just been like, oh my God, I can't believe I spent a first round pick on this guy all season long, and by some miracle, your team is still alive at this point, you could have something for the next few weeks.
He was the RB3 last week. That was his first finish, you know, inside the top 15 since week 3. So it has been quite some time. But yeah, I think so, man. Like, the thing about Jaylen Warren, it's not like he's taken over the backfield by any stretch. But in Najee's case, when you're as inefficient as he has been this year, I mean, it was enough workload to really reduce him to more of a RB3 more weeks than not. So I am going to have Najee as a recommended start, assuming Warren is going to be out of the picture. I mean, last week, 93% snaps, 20 carries, and 6 targets. And that was with Benny Snell being active. They just said, keep on chilling, Benny. I know Jalen's out. Not a problem there. So again, last season, only Derrick Henry had more expected PPR points per game than Najee Harris. Obviously, Najee wasn't the number two running back in the league in real fantasy points. But when you have the number two workload, you know, you fall off a bit, you can still fall into the top 10, top 12. This year, he only ranks 14th in those expected PPR points. But again, it makes sense if those go on the up and up. So look, I think now Najee and Freiermuth probably the two best options in this offense. Maybe one day Deontay Johnson can score another touchdown. Any hope for bounce back in this, you know, wide receiver room? Because hey, Pickens had a nice game, dropped that 49-yard touchdown there at the end. I do think this week with Xavien Howard projected to match up against Deontay, did a really good job against Amari Cooper before the Dolphins bye. I'm looking at the wrong matchup. Stephon Gilmore should be on Deontay Johnson, even tougher matchup. So this proves my point even better. I do think Pickens, straight up, I would take him over Deontay this week.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think he's the only one who like gives you an access to a ceiling outcome. And that's what you're going to hope for in this sort of passing attack where there's nothing reliable. There's nothing like on a yards per target basis, or if you want to flip it around to the quarterback, a yards per attempt basis, you're just very unlikely to have it. So you need to have some big plays, some contested catch, sort of big plays down the field, and that's what Pickens is gonna give you. And no one cares about your fantasy team news. I do have Najee Harris on my Scott Fishbowl team, which I'm in first place. I'm in first place in my division, top 100 team overall. So props to me on that one. Jamal Williams has been coming up huge for me in that format. So props to me. I just want to throw that out there.
Yeah, my Trey Lance, Kyler Murray, Scott Fishbowl team doing super good this year. Before I move on to the AFC South, want to pay a few bills, give a shout out to a couple sponsors. The PFF Fantasy Football Podcast is sponsored by Western Southern Financial Group. While you focus on your roster moves, Western Southern helps advance your money moves, buying your first home, planning to start a family, wondering how to make your money grow. Western Southern's playbook of life insurance, investment, and retirement solutions helps you rest assured on game day. Team up to understand needs and address goals with a game plan built just for you. Get started at westernsouthern.com/PFF. Also, even though best ball mania has ended, Underdog Fantasy is still the easiest and most fun way to spice up your football season with their pick'em game. Just look for your favorite or least favorite player stats. Pick whether you think they'll end up with a higher or lower total than that number in this week's game, and you can win up to 20 times your money in a single night. Underdog keeps it super simple with their easy-to-use website and mobile apps. Pick between 2 and 5 players for your pick'em entry. Get all your picks right, and you'll take home some cold, hard cash. It's simple to get started. Just head on over to underdogfantasy.com or download the app. Sign up a promo code PFF and Underdog will double your first deposit up to $100. That's Underdog Fantasy promo code PFF. Get in on the action today. And a special shout out to Underdog Fantasy. I saw someone tweet out a picture of these awesome tennis balls that had Underdog Fantasy on them. And PFF Lily, my lovely 30-pound wiener dog, we are working on the weight loss, Kevin. I'm buying her the expensive doggy diet food. Like, we are doing it. A lot of walks, but she's not a toy dog. She's a tennis ball dog through and through. I got the BarkBox deal, and we have a giant crate of toys sitting there that she never touches. It's just one tennis ball after another. Reached out on Twitter, and I said, hey, Underdog, I want these, and I have been assured that they are already being mailed to me. So Underdog Fantasy, the best place to go play best ball, and especially love their pick'em game as well. Just get legalized in Ohio, guy. I cannot wait, but oh my, Kevin. Big news. Big news.
This is actually legit breaking news. I mean, everyone's going to have heard about this by the time that they listen to this, is that the players have been informed that Zach Wilson will not start against the Bears. So they are benching Zach Wilson. It's official. This is not Adam Schefter. This is Adam Schefter who actually tweeted this one out. It doesn't say who's going to start, though. It just says that the players have been informed that Zach Wilson's not going to start. So I don't know. Was it like Mike White second on the pecking order? I don't know. I don't pay attention to these things, but I thought at some point that was the case. But who knows? Who knows who will start?
That is interesting. Yeah, because Flacco, I mean, early on, I know it wasn't completely full of roses, but going out there, I mean, they had that come from behind win against the Browns. He was at least putting up, you know, some level of counting numbers. With Mike White, I just feel like he's like the classic example of, if you didn't watch the guy play last year, you think he was a lot better than he was. I read those check down numbers. Like, you're not going to get, I maintain the ceiling's higher with Wilson, but obviously the floor is freaking way lower than those other guys. So we'll see what happens. I mean, I'd probably take Flacco over White at this point, but who knows? We'll see.
Yeah, I didn't watch a lot of White, but White had the island game thing, right? Didn't you play during an island game and played pretty well? So that's like half of your reputation. You can play 7 games if you have one good island game. And props to, we'll talk about him in the NFC pod, Jimmy Garoppolo came through in an island game for me and other truthers. As long as you do that, then you're like set for the next 5 weeks, no matter whether you just do absolutely nothing.
He had a nice comeback against the Bengals. Look, he's only played 2 or 3 games. Maybe Mike White is going to be the next Tom Brady. Who knows, Kevin?
Why not? If Bailey Zappe can do it, you know, the Jets need that sort of luck, I think.
First place, 7-3, Tennessee Titans again home this week against the Bengals, who are favored by 1.5. Game total just at 42.5. I feel like it's the same conversation as we had last week. Ryan Tannehill brings a new level of upside to this passing game. You can pick pretty much any efficiency stat that you want to since he's been in Tennessee, and it's going to tell you he's a top 10 quarterback. No, he doesn't have the volume of those other guys, so I'm not saying you need to rank him that high, but just perpetually underrated, and it was good to see in an island game as we got last Thursday night for him to put some of that on display. Now, the big winner here was rookie wide receiver Treylon Burks, starting to get those, you know, AJ Brown comps going heavy again. And Kevin, he looks good out there. Now, I don't think it was, you know, the complete can't you know, can't bench him the rest of the way, sort of performance out there. And, you know, we had a similar reaction after Christian Watson's 3-touchdown game. That said, now back-to-back weeks, Nick Westbrook-Ikhine and Treylon Burks, the passing game finally has some upside. And this was not the case, man, throughout the first part of the year. I mean, there was an alarming stretch here between, let's see, what was it here? Between weeks 4 and 9, this team did not even have 140 passing yards in a game. So just the fact they've had 244 and 320 over the past 2 weeks, Treylon Burks, solid wide receiver 3, potentially moving forward with a little bit more upside. I will caution, though, still an offense that's going to be going through Derrick Henry more weeks than not, the second most run-heavy offense in the NFL. But do you think that this group, where, again, just they look so one-dimensional throughout the season, real life-wise, could this Tennessee team arguably have a better ceiling than they did last year?
I don't know about that, but I think Treylon Burks is pretty good. I mean, the thing is, as you mentioned, they got 337 yards and 24 completions to spread around. That's not going to happen every single week. But still, it was good to see him put up the numbers. Now, it was heavily influenced by a 50-yard catch to end the game where he beat Jair Alexander. He gave him the too small taunt, which I mean, that should be legal. That should always be legal to do that one. And the only thing I'll say about Burks is 100% bonehead, right? He definitely is that sort of guy. So he can disappear. He probably runs like 2 or 3 wrong routes every single game. But on that type of play, at least he looks like he belongs, right? If you were going to say this guy's a big bodied receiver who can get open just based upon strength and athleticism and size, like he looks like he can do that, where sometimes that doesn't translate for guys. So I'm excited about him, and I'm probably more excited about him than someone like, you know, Meshi Christian Watson on the other side. So I think he's a guy you can start going forward, but you're going to definitely have some weeks where they only pass for 175 yards and he has, you know, 3 catches for 27 yards or something like that.
Tough year for Jair Alexander. The Cowboys are almost going out of their way to target him a few weeks ago. He's only shadowed one time, and Terry McLaurin immediately snatched his soul. Just not a great season there.
He can go home and lie on his bed of dollar bills after getting that contract in the offseason. He's like, oh, that was a horrible game. Then he goes home and just like opens up the, hope he didn't have his money in like FTX or something, opens up the brokerage account. And he's like, okay, I'm still feeling pretty good. All right, let's go.
Final notes, Derrick Henry, once again leading the NFL in rushing yards per game. This would be the 4th straight season he's pulled that off. Obviously, has a little bit of revenge on his mind after his Bengals D held him just 62 yards on 20 rush attempts last year in the AFC divisional round. Moving on to our second place, Indianapolis Colts. 4-6-1, again, facing off against the Steelers at home on Monday Night Football, where they are favored by 2.5 points. Look, I understand running backs can't play 100% of the snaps out there, and I get that you're going to have situations where you have a 2-minute back and you have a pass down back, and maybe they can just be – they can do that, and it's okay. Jonathan Taylor doesn't have to play every single snap, but I don't know, Kevin. The final drive of the game when you play 6 snaps and Deion Jackson plays every single one of them over Jonathan Taylor, it's like, what's the point of having Jonathan Taylor on your team if you're not going to put him out there in the game's most important moments? And if they're not the only team to do this, there was a time last year where Dontrell Hilliard got stuffed on 4th down instead of Derrick Henry for the Titans. Look at the Super Bowl and Samaje Perine playing over Joe Mixon at the end. So this isn't, you know, me just acting like Jeff Saturday is the only guy to ever have a team doing this, but my God, man, like, I don't have a question here, but Deion Jackson played all 6 snaps over Taylor on the final drive. What are we doing here, man? It's Jonathan Taylor. Just get him on the field. Fuck.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. It's disappointing. At the same time, with Deion Jackson back, I think it's still good to see basically 80% of the rushing attempts going to Taylor and, you know, 65-70% of the routes going to him. He's not going to have 85% that he had the week before when Jackson wasn't there, but that's still a pretty good workload. So I get it. That one drive you can point to, I think generally you could be pretty happy with his usage.
With the wide receivers, it does continue to be extra nice having Matt Ryan back under center. Michael Pittman is back in the wide receiver one conversation, especially against his Steelers defense. Dead last in the NFL in PPR points per game allowed to the position. We've seen Gabe Davis, A.J. Brown, most recently T. Higgins, Jamar Chase. Plenty of big-bodied alphas like Michael Pittman go off against this group. Even Paris Campbell starting to get some love, and he is going to be our official bounce-back sleeper of the week. Love our friends over at Sleeper. I get to continuously bring up, you know, just how sad my PFF fantasy team is, how good Kevin's is, and I guess Nate's kind of
been. I lost Kyle Pitts though. So
oh no,
talk about this is like a week of catharsis. I guess we should wait for the NFC podcast, but a week of catharsis for everyone who's able to drop him from their roster. Oh, it felt so good.
But I will say Paris Campbell now last four games with Matt Ryan under center, PPR wide receiver 10, wide receiver 5, wide receiver 11, and last week's slight fall off to the wide receiver 32. We are not worried though. 11, 12, 9, and 6 targets in those games. And I just think without Nyheim Hines in the picture, it does make sense that Campbell is emerging more so as their underneath threat. So yeah, we did see the targets dip a little bit with Deion Jackson back in the, you know, conversation, but Paris Campbell, confident volume-based wide receiver 3 in full PPR formats, especially, again, in what is shaping up to be a fantastic matchup for this entire wide receiver room. So, yes, shout out our friends at Sleeper, best place to go play redraft or dynasty fantasy football. 3-7 third place Jaguars coming back off the bye this week. They're facing off against the Ravens. Ravens are 4-point road favorites. This one's going to be in Jacksonville. Game total just 43.5. So I mentioned this with Mac Jones is a bad thing, but for Trevor Lawrence, it's a good thing. Again, PFF passing grade, passer rating, yards per attempt, adjusted completion rate, everything is up compared to the Urban Meyer induced first season. And I think before the bye, man, in that Chiefs game, we really saw Lawrence make a handful of just top tier, incredible throws that reminded you of why he was the number one overall pick of 2021 and lauded as one of the best prospects we've seen since Andrew Luck. Now, there have been lows throughout the season too, but just the fact we've gotten these highs, Kevin, I mean, I think it's a good four games now where he's worked as a top 8 quarterback on the week in PFF passing grade. You should feel pretty good about this team moving forward. They're going to get Calvin Ridley back next year. ETN's running the ball. I know they're only 3-7, but you got to love the early returns of the Doug Peterson-led Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah, I think so. I think this is a sneaky team where they don't have the easiest schedule in the second half. I mean, they got the Lions on the schedule. They got the Texans. They got the Titans twice, Ravens, Cowboys, and Jets. So they don't have the easiest schedule the rest of the way. But I would not be surprised if this is a team that could finish at least 4-3 the rest of the way, maybe even 5-2. Like, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility the way they played in the first half of the year. A lot of bounces, a lot of plays, a lot of one score games, a lot of late drives, a lot of fourth down conversions did not go their way. I think they can going forward. And I mentioned Amari Cooper earlier as a guy that we have to give flowers to. As long as we're in the flower giving business, Christian Kirk is right below Amari Cooper. So all those guys that I named being above Amari Cooper as the only guys above Amari Cooper, well, just add Amari Cooper to that list, and it's the same list for Christian Kirk, who is ahead of CeeDee Lamb right now and others so far this season. I mean, it's a step down from those other guys, but still, you have to be pretty happy if you drafted Christian Kirk, really solid, solid fantasy receiver this year.
Kirk has 6 games inside the position's top 20 just in terms of weekly finishes and only 4 outside of it. So he really has been awfully consistent. I mean, he started off high and then he started to die off. And before week 6, Doug Peterson said, needs to be up there, 9, 10, 11 targets. Since that quote, Kevin, 5, 10, 7, 9, and 12 targets with 2 rush attempts thrown in there along the way. So Doug Peterson, giving the guys that we want him to give the ball. He got James Robinson out of town. He's featuring Travis Etienne. I am a fan of these Jacksonville Jaguars. Continue to fire up both Kirk and Etienne in fantasy lineups of all shapes and sizes. Takes us to our last place, 1-8-1 Houston Texans. They're in Miami. Dolphins are favored by 13.5 points. I don't like anyone in this passing game. Brandon Cooks has already been largely atrocious throughout the season. I mean, last week he had a deep ball hitting him in the face and then get intercepted. He also dropped, honestly, maybe the best pass Davis Mills has thrown all season down the seam, went right off Cooks' hands. And again, the only reason that game was even decent last week for Cooks is because somehow he got matched up against John Bostic, the Commanders linebacker, and he just outran him for a 40-yard gain on a crosser. So facing a healthier Xavien Howard, who did a really good job against Cooper before the bye, I am fading Cooks, and by virtue of that, also not exactly thrilled about Nico Collins. So once again, it's Damian Pierce, and that's it. Coming off a game which he had -2 rushing yards before contact on 10 carries, 1 touchdown over the past 5 weeks. But guess what? I'm sure Lovie Smith's big takeaway from last week was that they need to get Damian Pierce more touches, and I'm sure he will do that. So if you have anything to add about the Texans, go ahead, Kevin. I hate this team.
No, I mean, not a lot to add. My only thing with Dameon Pierce is I think we knew that there was like a low floor potential for him, but he had just been defying it so far. So we shouldn't, it's not like we should be completely off of Pierce, but we should just recognize that, yeah, this is well within the range of outcomes on this team to have that sort of thing happen. He's never going to be like a guy you can completely count on from a floor perspective. But of course, you're putting him in the lineup if you have him.
First place Chiefs leading the AFC West at 8-2. This week, they're home against the Rams, 14.5-point favorites. I believe that is the highest spread in favor of a team facing the former Super Bowl champion in NFL history. Game total resting at 44. So I went ahead and I took Mahomes's, you know, passing numbers. I've already said the kind of group I look at throughout the podcast. Just wanted to see where this version of him ranks compared to past editions. And 2021 was the worst version of Mahomes. We saw that, you know, 6-7 game lull during the year where just, again, those two high defenses were giving Mahomes, and to be fair, a lot of other great quarterbacks in the league, lots of problems out there. But just this season, PFF passing grade, yards per attempt, passer rating, pick your stat, he really is much closer to the guy we saw in 2018 and 2020, even better than the guy in 2019. Obviously had to deal with that midseason ankle injury going on that year. So it's just incredible, man. MVP front runner loses Tyreek Hill, and we're still leading the number one offense in the league in points per game. The eye test is somehow continuously better than what the statistics tell us. And yeah, just Patrick Mahomes, man. Just Kings stay Kings out here, Kevin. And I guess MVP front runner. And I don't know who's going to beat the Chiefs in the AFC.
Yeah. That was a big win for them to really take a commanding lead in the division, which it's kind of weird to think about the AFC West, right? This was supposed to be the power super division, and now it's basically the Chiefs and everyone else at this point. My one note on the Chiefs is I think the backfield has kind of played out how we thought it would, but even more so now with CEH being completely out. So it's thin, you know, it's narrow, but I'm never going to get that excited about a Chiefs backfield because they just don't throw it enough to the running backs or run it enough on the goal line to count on touchdowns there. In the receiver group, I don't know. I'm a little ambivalent when thinking about someone like Sky Moore because he did have 5 catches for 63 yards. And I think some people may see that and be attracted to the talent and going forward. I guess I would put some context in here, which I think is really fairly negative, just to say that, you know, no Juju Smith-Schuster, no Mecole Hardman, which will continue. 9 routes into the game, Kadarius Toney gets injured, and still Sky Moore only ran 16 routes, though, where Justin Watson had 37 routes. Noah Gray, and, you know, they brought in the tight end for 2 tight end sets. He had 18 routes. So he's still not getting any usage. So I don't know what to expect from him going forward. If you might be getting excited about him, I figure Juju comes back and he's just probably a non-entity going forward.
That's my thought. Other than Juju coming back, it's going to be tough to rank any of these wide receivers on a week with no buys, you know, inside the position's top 36. So you could do worse than having a dart throw flex that's a Chiefs wide receiver playing with Patrick Mahomes. But yeah, I don't think Sky, Justin Watson, MVS must starts by any stretch of the imagination. The thing with Pacheco, so he's going to be getting seemingly 15 plus carries moving forward if Ronald Jones isn't activated and then kind of takes that little third of the committee away from Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who is going to miss some time with a high ankle sprain. I wouldn't expect Rojo to be activated, but again, just one of those pieces that we do need to see what happens this week just to be sure. The only problem with Pacheco, man, like the Chiefs, once they get inside the 10-yard line, like they are not looking just to hand the ball off and get into the end zone that way. Only offense in the league throwing the ball on over 70% of their snaps inside the 10-yard line. So again, they're 14.5-point favorites this week. This should be the week where Pacheco can hopefully find the end zone, get 15, maybe even 20 carries out there. I'm just, you know, I don't think that he is someone. He's kind of got the Dameon Pierce role, honestly, in a better offense, maybe not quite as much of a pass game upside because he's only caught 3 passes all season long. So I guess my only thing with Pacheco, like back-to-back solid performances, he has 18.9 total fantasy points there. When you're not catching passes, you're going to have a low weekly floor, even in this high upside offense. But I guess, again, my point here is that the high upside offense isn't as great for the running backs as we would expect because they get inside the 10-yard line becomes a Travis Kelce show. So I have Pacheco as my RB23 this week. Do you think that's fair, Kevin, or should I just be a little bit higher on the guy? Because again, 14.5-point home favorites, like if there is ever a week to fire up Pacheco, like this is absolutely it.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, yeah, the last game is probably a good microcosm for why things are so hard for Pacheco. Other than, again, you're just going to have to, hoping that you're going to get him falling into the end zone twice by some miracle they decide to run the ball because, yeah, he got his 100 yards. You might say, oh, he had a 100-yard game. Well, this was a relatively run-heavy game and game plan for the Chiefs. It's not a lot. They had 27 carries, let's say, but that's a lot for them. Or 23 carries when you take Patrick Mahomes out of the mix there. So it was a very run heavy game for them, and he averaged 7.1 yards per carry in order to get 107 yards. So like you really got to thread the needle to get to a decent fantasy game without falling in the end zone for Pacheco, and that's probably only going to happen maybe one out of every three, four games.
Second place Los Angeles Chargers coming off that, solid effort on Sunday night against the Chiefs. Just wasn't quite enough this week there in Arizona. Chargers are favored by 4.5 game total. Actually had a pretty high for at least, 2022, 47.5 points. So with Justin Herbert, we saw him finally start to get some weapons back last week. And then Mike Williams quickly re-aggravates his injury. But at least Keenan Allen was out there. We saw Josh Palmer doing his thing. But, oh, hey, Gerald Everett was also out of the picture. So up and down getting the guys back in. We saw some flashes though. The two bombs to Josh Palmer, I guess one bomb to Josh Palmer, one to Keenan Allen at the end, that was particularly impressive. But once again, it's one of those games where great follow, you guys all know him, but Benjamin Solik over at the Ringer, like he said at one point in the second half, like I don't think Herbert's thrown one pass like past the sticks the entire second half. Immediately launches a bomb to Keenan Allen. It was a funny moment just with the timing and everything. But prior to that, it was a fair point. And you look at it on the season, only four quarterbacks have an average target depth under 7 yards. Matt Ryan, sure. Baker Mayfield, makes sense. Daniel Jones, fine. Also Justin Herbert. So we've talked before about how wide receivers kind of control and earn their average target depth. Do you hold that same principle to be true for quarterbacks? Because I'm more willing to say that Herbert isn't throwing downfield because of the scheme and because, like, who is he going to throw downfield to more weeks than not? I mean, Mike Williams and Jalen Guyton were supposed to be those guys. You could already argue they weren't really the best field stretchers. I know they can do it, but not exactly the most, blazing fast guys out there. So is this just low ADA? Is this part of who Herbert is? Or again, is he just being used really poorly for a quarterback with one of the strongest arms in the NFL?
I mean, I think it's part of who he is. That's one part of it. He had, at least going into this game, the lowest sack rate in the NFL, despite not having great protection. He gets rid of the ball quickly. He took 6 sacks, though, which is shocking in this game against the Chiefs. That was kind of really the story of the game, was the Chiefs' defense ability to generate pressure and get sacks. So there's that. There's the scheme thing. Everyone likes to harp on this. Like everyone on fucking Twitter thinks that if I was the offensive coordinator, I'd just say, Justin, throw deep. And then boom, profit, profits come in. I think the most important thing is they don't have the horses to get open down the field. Even that long pass to Keenan Allen, I mean, that was like a borderline turnover worthy play because the defender was ahead of Keenan Allen. Keenan Allen did some sort of like slingshot move to get ahead. I don't know. Probably wasn't even legal to slingshotted past him in order to go and get the ball on the last play of the game where they have to stretch a bit here, right, to get into field goal position. I mean, it was a bad throw, a forced throw from Herbert. Like the defender was inside of Keenan Allen's jersey. Like Keenan Allen, I love Keenan Allen. You cannot get open down the field, Keenan Allen.
It was on, to be fair, real quick, it was on like 3rd and 18. So it's like, what the hell?
No, I agree. But I'm just saying, like, he doesn't separate down the field. That even the deep pass that they got, he was like, he had negative separation. The defender actually had separation on Keenan Allen when the ball was in the air. And even when he had the long pass to Palmer on that play, I mean, he was open and it was great to get him down the field, but he's not a separator also. So I think that is the most important thing. I think if you put like Tyreek Hill on this offense or something, it's not like they'd be checking down the ball every single play. No, he'd be stretching the field and throwing it down the field. Tua's ADOT has jumped by 2 yards this year, and he's not getting rid of the ball any slower. He's not holding onto the ball anymore. I think that's more important than anything else.
Obviously firing up Eckler.
Get him some people to throw it to. Like, yeah. What the fuck?
Not the best real life offenses. We've seen it with Carolina when you're being forced to just feed a running back in the passing game. Yeah, it's not going to produce that many downfield passes. Shocker. But fire up Eckler, obviously. Keenan Allen back in the top 24 conversation. And Josh Palmer, again, 2 out of these last 3 weeks looking awfully good. As long as Mike Williams is going to stay sidelined, he's going to be a rock solid wide receiver 3 at worst. Also keep an eye on Gerald Everett getting back from that groin injury. Third place, Las Vegas Raiders, sitting there at 3-7. This week, they're in Seattle. Seahawks favored by 3.5 points. Game total at 47.5. So, man, Davante Adams out there, like, he put Surtain in a blender on that game-winning play. That said, like, the amount of times this dude is able to get wide open on these deep crosses, like, there's ever a guy to focus on. But he was a little boomer busty to start the season. You know, he had the huge debut, and it's like, oh, can anybody in this world even cover Davante Adams? Has a little dud. And then in week 8, he had the game against the Saints where he only had the one catch for 3 yards. But since then, Kevin, 10 catches, 146 yards, 2 touchdowns. 9 catches, 126 yards, 1 touchdown. 7 catches, 141 yards, and 2 touchdows. I said, I think in week 8 or 9, I was ready to just give Tyreek Hill best wide receiver in the NFL. And I thought even last year, Tyreek Hill was the most impactful wide receiver in terms of who's putting the most fear into opposing defenses. I gave Davante Adams the hat tip as the best pure wide receiver last year, whatever that means. I know they're both awesome and we're grasping at straws to an extent here, but do you still consider, or have you considered Adams to be the 101 wide receiver in the NFL?
No, I don't think so. Only because he's a little bit touchdown dependent so far of what he's doing. I mean, he has fewer yards than Diggs, Hill, and Jefferson. He has way fewer receptions than those guys, even though he's been targeted more often. It's just he has the 10 touchdowns. And Diggs has 8 touchdowns, so he's in the mix there. But then Hill and Jefferson only 4 touchdowns apiece, and that's what's really been separating them. You mentioned that he's been up and down, but I think we have to just – we don't want to get into this trap that, like, Cooper Kupp – 2021 sort of season is something that could be replicated as far as, like, literally never having a down week the entire time. No matter who we're talking about here, Stephon Diggs is potential to for him to have a down week. Tyreek Hill is maybe the closest thing to not really having a super down week just because of how heavily that he's targeted in this passing game. But, you know, Justin Jefferson had a few weeks down. AJ Brown, all these guys can have a few weeks down. So Davante Adams is still in that mix. He's still a solid, solid, solid receiver, but I wouldn't necessarily say he's the best only because I'm not sure he's going to continue to get those touchdowns going forward, but they do structure their offense around getting him the ball in the red zone. Also, it's not just long touchdowns, but he's gotten a few of those really, really long touchdowns this year that won't necessarily extrapolate the rest of the season.
I got one more bundle of flowers to give out here, and that is going to be Josh Jacobs, the overall RB4 on the season.
Yeah. He probably gets most of the flowers. He's probably like, he's getting the crown and the flowers, the tiara and the flowers, I think.
Only Austin Eckler, Derrick Henry, and Christian McCaffrey. More PPR points on the year. The dude's on pace for 2,007 yards from scrimmage. Have come quite a long way from, you know, seemingly being showcased in the Hall of Fame game out there. Credits Josh McDaniels for feeding his best running back the ball all season long. Set up awfully well against the Seahawks defense that ranks just 28th in PPR points per game allowed to the position. Moving on, last one here in the AFC edition of this podcast. We'll have NFC up for you guys shortly after this. But the last place, 3-7 Broncos in Carolina this week. Broncos favored by 2.5 points, game total at 36.5. So they would be 9-1 if they had just been able to score 19 points in regulation throughout the entire season. Might have even be 18 points. Like, again, as much as I'm shocked that the Browns haven't been able to be better than 3-7 with how good Jacoby and the offense has been, it's the same exact thing in Denver. Like, the fact is defense has been so good. You said it before, top two, top three unit. And I don't even think that's up for debate. And if you want to say they're number one, you know, I'd probably say the Cowboys, but they are right there and deserve to be in that conversation. But my God, just this offense, 32nd ranked group. Maybe, just maybe, Kevin, we got Melvin Gordon out of town. Maybe all the problems are solved now. We can just focus on feeding Latavius Murray the football and just profit after that, as the kids would say. But man, just this sucks, man. And I don't think it's getting better. Do you?
No, I don't think it's getting better. And yeah, I wonder what sort of fab is being spent on Latavius Murray this week. It's like, has a 90% chance of going up in smoke, whatever. You might as well just roll that fab up and smoke it instead of spending it on Latavius Murray. But it has some chance of doing something. I mean, I'm just pumped to see this Marlon Mack, Latavius Murray backfield.
We do have Chase Edmonds out of the picture as well. Now he is back on the IR with an ankle injury. So again, I think that's about right. 90-10. There is a 10% chance.
There's a 10% chance though. So, you know, you never know.
There is a chance. But yeah, Latavius Murray, you know, think about it. This guy is going to turn 33 in January. He is a grinder. He's been a grinder his entire career, and he had some good years out there. But like, with him, wouldn't you expect like his forte to just be picking up yards after contact? Because he is literally dead last this year in yards after contact per carry among 50 qualified running backs. So just Maybe
he falls
maybe
forward. He tries to fall forward. I'll give him that.
He is an early down back in a terrible offense that has not shown the ability to create explosive plays. Other than that, you know, things should be absolutely fine for Latavius. I have him ranked as my RB33 on the week, and that still feels high. I'll be answering most close start sit decisions with him, with the other guy. It does seem like Jerry Jeudy could miss another week with his ankle. He was not able to open up the week with the practice, I believe I saw from our friends over at Underdog NFL, best news crew in the game. But yeah, look, if Judy's out again, Cortland Sutton can be treated as, you know, a top 30 option, but even then I'm not exactly thrilled about it. Can't get the guy in the top 20 these days. Greg Dulcich, out of all people, Kevin, probably the most fantasy relevant guy in this offense. What a time to be alive.
I'm disappointed by him too. I was expecting a little bit more, but you know what can you do? It's like it's bad. Not thrilled about it. That's just that's the Broncos just across the board. Not thrilled about it.
Could have just Broncos 3-7, not thrilled. And with that, it's going to wrap up another edition of the PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. Kevin, we'll be right back talking more NFC. But in the meantime, let the folks know what you got over there at PFF.com. And you're always producing the excellent Unexpected Points podcast, where I saw you had a very honest, heartfelt, you know, just statement out there for your loyal listeners.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, Unexpected Points, if you want to check it out, like the episode that I did on Tuesday, I go into the Zach Wilson thing. I go into some of the like can't elevate quarterback thing. So it's interesting. I get into some of the larger points of maybe some evaluation and theory. And of course, my take was that they had to replace Zach Wilson, and it's happened. So that's good to see going forward. At the same point in time, so people were going absolutely nuts about this comment. And like the whole point is he stinks. Okay, that's the point. That's what we need to worry about. So anyway, check that out. Of course, Kevin Cole, PFF on Twitter, got the visualizations, all that stuff coming out too.
Great day to be great. As always, you can get my positional breakdowns on pff.com. Editor crew gave us the 3 p.m. deadline on Wednesday. Very fair. We all got, you know, stuff to do with the holidays and all that. We never want to deprive anyone there, but my goodness, Kevin, these late nights have been racking up. I'm very happy though to be, you know, have all the positional stuff done though, and we'll be moving on. But yeah, my mismatch manifesto will be out Friday a little bit later, but I'll make sure to get those charts out later this afternoon. So appreciate all you guys tuning in. As always, for Kevin, I'm Ian. Thanks again for checking out the PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. And until next time, take care, everybody.